Welcome to the 386th episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. Stay tuned for my interview with author Simon Lelitch, author of the new novel, The Search Party. Stay tuned for the interview. The Reading and Writing Podcast is brought to you by Libro FM. Libro.fm lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore. You can pick from more than 185,000 audiobooks, including bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers. You'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there, but you'll be part of a different story, one that supports your local community and your local bookstore. If you're new to audiobooks, they're the perfect way to get more books into your busy life. You can listen during your commute, while doing chores, walking the dog, or just relaxing at home. All you need is a smartphone and the free Libro.fm app. If you already love audiobooks and don't know what to listen to next, check out recommendations and curated lists from people who know audiobooks best, your local bookseller. Here's your special offer from the Reading and Writing Podcast. Get two audiobooks for the price of one today with your first month of membership with the code RWPODCAST at checkout. This offer is only valid for new members in Canada and the U.S. Check out Libro.fm today. Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Simon Lelitch, author of the novel The Search Party. Lelitch's previous novels have included The House and The Liar's Room, among others. Simon, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure. If someone listening hasn't heard about your novel, The Search Party, yet, how would you describe the novel?
Oh, I suppose it's a murder mystery, in a sense. There's a missing girl and five friends who set off to try and find her. And they quickly discover that the search party they formed isn't quite what they planned. And it turns out to be something of a witch hunt. So you've got the story unfolding from their perspective, but you've also got a detective inspector who's trying to piece things together from halfway through the investigation, as it were. That's where the book starts. So you've got a kind of two strands to the story, and they hopefully come together at the end.
And so, do you remember the original idea or impetus that led you to write The Search Party?
Yeah, I do. I've always loved Stephen King's novella, The Body. I actually came to it first as Stand By Me, the film, the movie, which I've always loved. I've always loved that premise, that sort of initial starting hook of a bunch of friends heading off into the wilderness. So I've always had that at the back of my mind as a kind of story I would like to write. And then I was reading, it was John McGregor's Reservoir 13, which is, I don't know if are you aware of the book? Have you read it?
I have not. I'm very aware of Stand By Me and The Body novella, but I'm not aware of the one that you just mentioned.
Yeah, so it's John McGregor. He's a British author. He's a fantastic writer. It's a very different genre. So he wrote a book, as I say, Reservoir 13, where someone goes missing, and it's not your sort of typical mystery, because you never, I don't think it's a spoiler to say, I think it's on the back cover, you never actually really find out what happens to this person, but it's about how the community is affected by someone going missing. So it's much more of a literary novel. But there's a group of friends in there, and I think there's a paragraph where they decide to go and form a search party for their friend and then quickly turn tail and head back home. And I was reading that, and then I thought of Stand By Me, and I thought, what happens if they go a little bit further? And what happens if they're not just trying to unravel the mystery of what happened to their friend? There's also a mystery about what they're actually taking with them. So yeah, so that was the initial kind of impetus for the novel.
What are your earliest memories of reading in books?
To be honest, I don't remember not being around books, not reading or having books read to me. I remember, right from a writing perspective, I remember being ill in junior school. So I would have been about, I don't know, probably about nine. And I was off school for probably a full term. So it was a couple of months. I set to writing a series of books. I call them books. They're about 12 pages long, I think. But I set to writing this series of books about a teddy bear who comes to life when his owner goes to sleep. And I think I've still got them somewhere in the loft. Yeah, that's where they're going to stay. But yeah, no, that was my first kind of, I've always loved words. I've always tried, I think I actually, before the Ted books, as I call them, I started to write sort of really bad Lord of the Rings ripoffs. So I've always wanted to write, and I think I've always had, my mum's always a massive reader, so we've always had books in the house. Yeah.
And so can you tell me about the process
of writing, just in terms of, obviously, given your success as a writer and the novels that you've had published, you kept writing from those early stories of a teddy bear that comes to life. What was your journey? And then if you can remember when you first started working on the first novel that you had published, what was that like?
Okay, so I after university, I had no clue what to do. So I became a journalist because I knew I liked writing and I knew journalism had something to do with words. So that kept me occupied for probably about 10 years, off and on. And I think that kind of sated my appetite to write. So I didn't do much creative writing in that time. But then I got to the point where I was getting a bit fed up, itchy feet. And I wrote one novel, which was, I finished. It wasn't very good. There was actually, I had some interest from a couple of agents, but it quickly died a death. So that's now firmly in the bottom drawer, just pinning down the TED books probably. And then I started with what became my first published novel, which was called Rupture over here. It's called 1,000 Cuts in the States. And that was, yeah, that was quite a quick process in the end, because it was, I think the difference for me from the other stuff I tried to write is I stumbled on an idea that really excited me. And I didn't have to force myself to get up to write it. I was desperate to do it. Any free time I had, I was at the keyboard. Yeah, so that was the novel that became my first published novel.
And so what for you was the jump from those earlier novels? Was it what you just said, the idea for that kind of kept you going and made the leap from something that you finished and didn't particularly like to having one that got published?
I think it was also a learning process. I think I even though this first novel I wrote has never been and will never be published, it's, I don't consider it a waste of time or a waste of effort, because I learned a lot, not just about what does work, but what doesn't work in a novel from a writing perspective. And I think the only way really, writing it is inherently wasteful, even for a novel, for the search party I must have. I keep a file of all the kind of sections I cut out of the book as I go. And I think it's longer than the book itself, but it all contributes to that kind of finished product. So you're probably, I wrote 200, 250,000 words for the search party, and it ended up being about 95,000 words. So I think that those initial forays into writing were invaluable. I never went to a creative writing class or anything like that, so I didn't have that kind of grounding. So for me, it was just giving it a go and trying to figure out what worked and what didn't.
Can you remember the first time you saw your first novel in a bookstore?
I got asked this the other day, actually. I've got a hazy recollection of... I go running occasionally, and I remember running past Tesco, which is a big supermarket chain over here, and they had copies of my first novel in the window, and their bookshelves faced out onto the street. So I remember running and hitting the street where Tesco is, and just jogging on the spot for about 10 or 15 minutes, staring at my book in the window. I probably saw it before then, but that's the one that stands out in my mind.
So you just mentioned the file for the search party on your computer and the material that you wrote, but didn't end up making it into the final book. I'm curious, what is your writing process like? Do you, once you have an initial idea for a novel, and you mentioned reading this Reservoir 13 and then thinking about the body and Stand By Me, do you sit down and write a plot outline, or are you more organically and just trying to see where the story leads you on the page?
No, exactly that, the latter. I've tried. I think I just get impatient with trying to write a plot outline, like a full summary, because I know from past experience that it's never going to turn out how I plot it. And for me, the kind of joy of writing is the discovery of the story as I go. So I think with the search party, I had to have an idea of, just because of the way it's constructed. So for example, you start on day 6. So stuff I had to have in my head fairly clear idea of what had happened up until that point. So that was the search party is probably the book I've planned the most. But generally, I start from the initial premise. I write a chapter, try out a voice, maybe rewrite it a few times, and then when I find something that sort of seems to create some momentum and excitement for me, then I just keep going. And it is quite wasteful. That's why I end up with all these offcuts. But it's very much the writing process is the discovery process for me.
And in that process of writing your various novels and having them published, and as we talked about earlier, leading up to your first novel, did you ever take published novels that you enjoyed and try to basically tear them apart and figure out how they work?
Probably not consciously. I never sat down with a book and tried to dissect it. But I think you know what it's like when you're reading a book, and sometimes you get it. There are books that you think, well, there are books that you get to the end and you think, wow, that's amazing. And I could never have written that. And I have no idea how the author would have done it. But there are other books where you see exactly how they would. It almost feels as though their thought processes would have been the same as yours. So there's an understanding that comes with certain books, which I suppose I fostered. And I think, I can't remember who it was, maybe Dorothy Brand in her on writing books. She talks about reading any book on two levels. There's obviously the top level of just, you know, pure enjoyment. But as you go, also trying to analyze it as you read. And it's becomes natural after a while, I think. But it's also something you have to keep your eyes open to as you're reading a book. But I've never actually sat down and dissected a novel for that purpose.
Gotcha. So what writing advice would you offer for listeners who are writing their own stories and novels?
That's a tough one. I think the advice I always reach for is be careful of what advice you follow. Okay. Because it's a bit of a cop-out, but I think the thing that I've learned the most...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Is that it has to be, writing is a very personal process, and something that works for one person will not work for necessarily for another. I think Stephen King writes with heavy metal music, you know, really loud in a darkened room, and that's what he espouses on writing. But yeah, I tried it and didn't work for me. But much as I love Stephen King, his process is very different from mine. I think you just need to be wary that you've got to, you obviously got to read a lot, and you've got to put in the hours at the keyboard. But other than that, you need to figure out a way that works for you. It shouldn't be a slog. It should be one of those things that you give yourself time to enjoy, give yourself opportunity to enjoy. And you're only going to do that if you're writing to your schedule rather than someone else's.
So are you working on another novel now?
I am. I've just finished and handed to my editor over here the follow-up to The Search Party, which is called, at the moment, it's called The Hiding Place. So that's basically the same detective who's in The Search Party on another case a year or so later. So that's at the editing stage. So I'm waiting for my editor to give me the thumbs up, or more likely the thumbs down and back to the drawing board email. And now I'm just toying with another standalone book. I'm at that stage we spoke about just now, where I've just written a chapter, the opening chapter, and I've got this idea and I can't quite see how it ends yet. So there's all these decisions you need to make at the start of a book, as you and your listeners will be aware. What tense to use, what first person narration, third person narration, how many narrators, what they know when they're starting to narrate the story. And that's where I'm struggling at the moment with this new project. But yeah, it's very early days. But I've got one on one's done and dusted at least. So I've got one in the bag.
Gotcha. So I'm curious, given the fact that you are published oftentimes close to simultaneously in the US and the UK, what is that process like in terms of edits? Do you submit it to your UK editor and then they make edits? And I'm curious, if you submit it to your US and they have suggestions, does it keep going back and forth? or do you finally say, okay, this is it for both markets?
Yeah, it has happened like that in the past. We've streamlined it a bit now. So yeah, generally my UK editor is my editor, my first line editor. And I think with The Search Party, what we did, it went to Katie, my editor over here, and Amanda, my editor in the States at the same time. Basically, the feedback came in all at once, and I was able to go through it all together, which is very helpful, because there have been instances in the past with different editors where I do the edits for the UK market, I think it's done, and then other edits come in from a different market and all sorts of questions are raised, that some of which have already been addressed. And it can get quite confusing with the whole too many chefs thing. But yeah, it was quite streamlined with The Search Party, which I was glad for.
So what novels or nonfiction books have you read recently that you enjoyed?
I'm rereading at the moment The Secret History for probably the fourth time. Again, it started, I just picked it up because I was just talking to you about that, the project I'm just at the very early stages with. And I was looking at how Donna Tartt starts the narration. And it's quite unusual with The Secret History because he's telling the story, the narrator is telling the story from a distance of time, which isn't the typical way of doing it. The common kind of response to that is that it creates some kind of distance between events in the novel and the the protagonist's experience. But it works in The Secret History. It works brilliantly. So that's one I'm rereading at the moment. Oh, I can't think of any of it off the top of my head, but I've been reading a lot of YA, actually. Some amazing authors I've discovered. And my son made me read the Neil Schusterman Scythe series, which is amazing. And also Jenny Downham's Before I Die, which was fantastic. Yeah, so I don't know if you guys know, but I also do some... I've written a YA series, which I was just taking up most of my last sort of 12 months, as well as doing the adult kind of crime thrillers. I've got this kind of sideline in books for sort of younger readers. And that's actually the project I'm looking at the moment. So I tend to alternate between the adult stuff and the stuff for younger readers.
Yeah, I noticed that on your website. So what are the names of the YA series in case listeners want to take a look at those?
Yeah, so the series for kids I've done is called The Haven, and there's three books in the series, The Haven, The Haven Revolution, and The Haven Deadfall. And they're really for readers probably 11 plus. It's about a kind of secret organisation of kids set in and below the streets of London, real world adventure story. But now I'm thinking about doing a YA kind of thriller, really, because my kids are getting older, and my oldest son, who's 13, wants me to write a crime book for teenagers, so that's what I'm toying with at the moment.
Great. Where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your novels?
I'm on Twitter, Simon_Lelich. That's obviously my website, simonlelich.com. I think that they're my main channels. Yeah, I'm not massively into the social media at the moment. I do get sucked in, and it does eat into the writing time. So Twitter's the main point of contact.
Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Simon Lelich, author of the novel The Search Party. The novel is available now, so go buy a copy. And Simon, thanks for doing this interview.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Now stay tuned for a brief excerpt from the audiobook of The Search Party by Simon Lelich, narrated by Ben Aragundade, Jack Rowan, Joe Gaminara, Nicole Davies, Fiona Button, and Sacha Dawan. Available from Penguin Audio, wherever audiobooks are sold.
The bloody rain. For 24 hours it had fallen, flamed the banks of the river with a tropical fervor. Except it was cold. Granted, the summer was officially over, but just 2 days ago the volunteers had been wearing shorts, while Fleet had stood sweating in his thinnest suit. Since the weather had broken, the water had struck like winter hail. Hard, pitiless, icy. A month's rainfall in barely a day, so they said. Fleet didn't know about climate change or all that, but he knew when something wasn't right. And this weather, it was freakish. As messed up as everything else that was going on in this town right now. He paused in the doorway of his hotel to light a cigarette, taking almost as much pleasure from the brief burst of warmth as he did from the nicotine itself. He exhaled a cloud of smoke that was immediately doused by the tumbling rain, then took two more drags and tossed the cigarette into the gutter, knowing it would be ruined anyway the moment he stepped into the torrent. "That's 50p down the drain right there," said a voice inside his head, his wife Holly's unmistakably, and Fleet felt a pang from somewhere in his gut. It was like an ulcer, this constant twinge, and he hadn't yet found a way to stop it hurting. He thought of home. Was it raining like this there, he wondered, because it felt biblical, as if he were to get into his car and drive the 3 miles to the parish limits, would he find himself confronting a ring of blue sky, a rainbow bridge to the world outside? "You, heavens above, rain down my righteousness." What was that, Genesis? Isaiah? The quote came unbidden, as powerfully evocative as a familiar smell, and it made him want to light another cigarette. "Detective Inspector Fleet." Just as he'd been about to dash towards his company insignia, Fleet turned. It was the hotelier, a woman in her late 40s, to whom Fleet had taken an instant dislike on first meeting her, only to later reverse his opinion completely. She dressed primly, rarely smiled, and wore her hair in a skin-stretching bun. Fleet had marked her down as yet another disapproving gossip, in a town with far more than its fair share that she'd proved discreet, generous, and obliquely loyal. In many ways, she was the closest thing Fleet had in this town to a friend. "There's a call for you," said Anne, as she pointed over her left shoulder. Her expression was apologetic. She was familiar enough now with Fleet's business to know the news he received was never good. Fleet checked the screen of his mobile. There were no missed calls, but there was also no reception. The entire town was pocked with dead spots, which seemed as appropriate an analogy as any. He followed Anne back inside. The hotel wasn't luxurious, but it was a luxury. Fleet lived only an hour or so along the coast, but rather than traveling back and forth, he'd taken a room here, at the Harbour View Hotel. For convenience, he'd told himself. The Harbour View was no more or less than your typical seaside B&B, and Fleet might have picked any one of the dozen or so guest houses that were clustered beside the harbour. All would have had space, and Anne was the only thing that set this one apart. She cleaned his room, fried his breakfast, and now fielded his calls. She did so much, it made Fleet feel guilty, to the extent he started making his own bed. Not that he used it much anyway. Most nights since checking in under just a week ago, he'd sat up gazing at the harbour, imagining what might be hidden beneath the water. Anne showed him to the little office behind the reception counter and gestured to the receiver lying unhooked on the desk. She nodded when Fleet offered his thanks and then closed the glass door to give him some privacy. "Robin Fleet," he announced into the receiver. "Boss, it's Nikki."
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.